Welcome to the Forever Abstinent Workshop. My name is Jerry, and I'm a compulsive eater from Seattle, Washington. Hi. Let's see. This workshop runs from 3:30 to approximately 4:30 to 5. It looks like they've given us some extra time. Are there any newcomers here today? Okay. Is there anyone celebrating a CHOW birthday or anniversary? Okay. It was. Oh, okay. Oh, Cheryl's birthday was on Wednesday, so let's give her a hand.
Thank you.
Would you like to qualify?
Sure. Okay, hi, I'm Cheryl J. From Oregon, grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater, one day at a time. I have on the 20th, which would have been Wednesday, I think, 24 years in. My abstinent, thank you. My abstinent date is July 20th of 1993. And I never thought in my life I'd be in something for this long, but it is my life. My weight loss was 140 pounds, and I maintained 140 pounds for probably about 22 of those years, and just between you ladies and, okay, there's no man in here. There was a man in here. Since menopause, I've had to adjust my food because I've gained a little bit, so I'm maintaining about 130-pound weight loss. But anyway, that's my story. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. And again, I'm Jerry O. from Seattle, Washington. My abstinence date is February 4th, 2008. I'm a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor and maintaining a 70-pound weight release. And so we'll be discussing some parts out of the Forever Abstinent book and focusing on reading labels and weighing and measuring. Several parts out of the Forever Abstinent book, focusing on reading labels, and on page 6, specifically, there's a paragraph that's I'll just read it. Read labels, check for sugar, flour, and starches. They must be listed fifth or below on the list of ingredients on packaged foods, salad dressings, and condiments. Agave nectar, corn or rice syrup solids, dextrose, evaporated or dehydrated cane juice, fructose, honey, lactose, malt syrup, maltodextrin, maltose, molasses, and sorghum syrup are in fact sugar. And this is something that I really love about CEA How is it's just fairly specific and simple. And you know, in my experience, you know, trying diets and counting the calories and the carbohydrates, and CEA How just makes it so simple for us. It's look at the list of ingredients. And so that's where I just love this program. And it's, you know, it's not complicated. We can certainly make it complicated. I know I have. But, you know, just looking and focusing on the ingredients, that's what's the beauty of the program for me, you know, paying attention to what I'm taking into my body. And the list of sugars, you know, this is a really great list that's here in Forever Abstinent. There's certainly a lot more names out there that are coming out all the time that I'm learning about, you know, outside of the program too, in my research. So yeah, keeping track of those things is very helpful for me. But that's definitely the beauty of the program. For those of us who've used to try and diet, I certainly tried that so much. Let's see. And so I want to emphasize, you know, and I guess too, you know, people have asked me, you know, and new people to the program, when they start reading labels, they focus on, you know, that new government regulated label, that's the nutrition facts. You know, that is on just about everything that's packaged, processed now. So, you know, I was really grateful when my sponsor pointed out that the nutrition facts is not what we're focusing on to work the program. We're looking at the ingredients. And I did bring a few examples. One of them is a dairy product label, which, you know, has a very prominent nutrition facts label that's just, you know, you can't miss it, which, you know, is a great thing. But for specifically for certain foods that we eat, you know, it's going to have naturally occurring sugar. So especially when I talk to family members, they're like, oh, but do you eat this because it has 13 grams of sugar per serving? And it's like, well, that's a naturally occurring sugar. I do count it as a protein. So when I'm looking at the ingredients label, that's where I'm checking to see that the ingredients, you know, if there's any kind of sweetener, any kind of starch or sugar added, that I'm looking to see if those things are listed fifth or lower. So I want to pass this around so people can look at it. I'm sure most of you are familiar. Thank you. I also have a label, a printed label, of a vegetable juice. And this is another great example, because this is something that we can use in our abstinence, something that my sponsor has approved. And, you know, again, it has naturally occurring sugars, you know, but we're not looking at the nutrition facts again. We're looking at the ingredients. And I'll just, as an example, the ingredients of this vegetable juice is reconstituted vegetable juice blend, which includes water and concentrated juices of tomatoes, carrots, celery, beets, parsley, lettuce, watercress, and spinach. And that's the first ingredient, all that list I just read you. If anything were in that list that were sugar or starch, then we would probably not want to use that. And then it also contains 2% of salt, vitamin C, ascorbic acid, natural flavoring, citric acid. So nothing has been, you know, that I've mentioned has flour or sugar. So this would be approved, and thankfully my sponsor approves it for my use. let's see. And there's another section in the Forever Abstinent book I want to point out. Let's see. Again, if you're unsure about anything, leave it alone. Call your sponsor, ask others in the program, and then make a decision. But do not depend on others to maintain your abstinence. You must empower yourself. And when in doubt, leave it out. If something listed in this food plan becomes a problem, avoid it. Avoid all individual binge foods, even if they are listed on this plan. And I think, you know, my interpretation of this, if it becomes a problem, it's an item that, for me, if, say, I use a certain condiment for my lunch and I start to obsess about that condiment, and it's, you know, not lunchtime yet, and I'm thinking, ooh, I'm gonna get this certain thing, and that to me is a problem. That's like a red flag going, oh, this is something that I need to take out of my food plan and just leave it alone. And because if it's renting space in my head, it's really not something that I should be having. So I'm really grateful, you know, and with the guidance of my sponsor, to be able to identify those things that could potentially be a problem for me. So, yeah, that's been really important for me to stay abstinent and not let the food take over my thoughts. Let's see. And there's another page. Let's see. Oh, page 21. And what about grains and starches? After completing the first 30 days of abstinence, each person must deal individually with the question of when to add whole grains and starches. It is important to know that for many years, the only grain available to carbohydrate abstainers using the gray sheet food plan that we told you about on page 3 was wheat germ, and even that underwent a lot of discussion before it was allowed. Here are some ground rules to use when you choose to add grains and starches. Grains and starches are added only twice a day. And I want to note that I'm reading page 21 is under the CEA How Food Plan after 30 days. Grains and starches must be weighed and measured, and they must be flour-free. Read the list of ingredients. If flour is listed, apply the sugar rule. And I'll take a moment to mention the sugar rule. I don't believe I have yet. The sugar rule is on page 14 in the current version of Forever Abstinent. To determine whether a particular food fits within our eating plan, we apply a set of guidelines that we call the sugar rule. And just to summarize, federal regulations require that ingredients be listed in their order of quantity in a food product from the most to the least. Sugar in any of its forms must be listed fifth or lower to qualify for use in our eating plan. Since flour and saliva combine to form a simple sugar, we also use the sugar rule when it comes to dealing with flour. In other words, flour, any kind of flour, must be listed fifth or lower on a product's list of ingredients. And again, it says look for sugar. Sugar must be listed fifth or lower to qualify for use in our eating plan. So it's just great to keep emphasizing fifth or lower. Let's see. So the sugar rule applies to all flours, including those made from foods not usually thought of as grains, such as garbanzos, soy, and mung beans. If the word flour is anywhere in the first four ingredients of a product, we do not eat the food. Individuals who add grains and starches need to be aware that certain grains may cause allergic reactions. Talk this over with your physician and find out if this applies to you. And I can share my experience with this, and I've had some unique experiences, and maybe you have too, with certain grains. There's one out there that's on our food plan that's considered okay to use, and I've had this certain grain at lunchtime, and half an hour I'm asleep, and it's like, that's not the effect I'm going for. You know, this is just not going to work if I'm at work and, oh, I want to go to take a nap, 30 minutes later. And I've tried it several times and same results. So I know that that's not for me. And then there's another one that's a different grain and it's making me hyperactive and I'm climbing the walls. You know, I just can't stop and I'm just becomes, Miss Motor Mouth. And so that's not good either, to have one extreme to the other. So I've just, figured out that those do not work for me. So that's what I call an allergic reaction. And it didn't cause a craving, but those reactions of, my behavior were definitely not okay. So anyway, that's just my personal experience. And again, it says here on page 21 in Forever Abstinent, whole grain flour is still flour. As you know now, flour behaves just like sugar in our bodies, so don't confuse it with whole grains. Be sure the product states whole grain and lists things like wheat, corn, or rye as the first ingredient, not wheat flour, corn flour, or rye flour. There are many flour-free breads. Always read labels to make sure the bread is flour-free. Remember, when in doubt, leave it out. And so I have a couple of label examples here of whole grain products. And so one of these is considered abstinent, and it's just fine. It doesn't have anything in the first five items on the ingredients list. And then this other example here, it does have something in it in the first five ingredients. So I want to pass these around. As a good example of something that we need to look for. It might look fine, but it may not work for you as an individual. I know for me, I had to learn the hard way and just realize, I bought this and it really isn't okay for me. And they're always coming out with new items, new recipes for their products. And it's something that, I've learned a lot over the years, like, this was okay, and now they changed the recipe, and maybe it isn't okay for me today. So, yeah, it definitely pays to keep looking at the labels, and, it can catch you by surprise. So anyway, how am I doing on time? I'm trying.
Hi, I'm Adele, compulsive overeater bulimic. You know, somehow I have found, I went to Alabama in January, and I went to Trader Joe to buy something that I had bought in California 2 days before. And it's like, feel funny. And it was kind of packaged funny, but it was the same label. And they had sugar within fearful, they had, I don't know if I can mention the word with H. They had something that was in the fifth ingredient. And it's like, wow, did I miss it in California? And they, and I didn't look at it because I was used to buying the same thing, So when I got back home, I looked. But what happened was, I guess because they sent it from Monrovia, California to Alabama, they put something in it that they don't put in California. And so even when we travel and stuff, we need to read the ingredient. I mean, I had just bought it 2 days before. And so so that's my statement. Thank you.
Thank you, Adele. Is anyone else? Thank you.
I see pasta, trying to be careful with what I'm saying, out of soy, or you had said something about soy and garbanzo. If it's flour, will it actually say flour on it? And otherwise, I don't need to worry about it. Is that correct?
Well, the way that I interpret it is if it is indeed flour, then, we really shouldn't use something that's flour. If it's whole grain, if it says whole grain, then that's what Forever Abstinent tells us.
Okay. But flour, we only know as the word flour. It's not other.
Right. You want to at least make sure it doesn't say flour or any sugar ingredients. But if it says the whole grain of the corn or what would you say, soybean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then I'm not going to tell you it's okay, but I would leave it out until you find out. I would talk to my sponsor.
And this may be a real ignorant question, but soybeans are protein?
They are.
Okay. Thanks.
Yes, on page 21, it definitely says that we want to, that the flour rule also, it includes those made from foods not usually thought of as grains, such as, garbanzo, soy, and mung beans, which I think, eaten by themselves are protein. Mm-hmm. So as well as, I did say soy.
Okay. I will sign. I have a question. The sweetener I use is stevia, and I've tried to find out if there's any long-term problems with it. Does anybody know? I have to be careful with stevia because I, can overuse that too. So I've learned to back off of it.
It says there's no hypoglycemic,
glycemic thingy index.
Saying 90% of it is maltodextrin. Because maltodextrin is cheap to make and stevia is expensive. If you get the stevia like I do, the sweet leaf, which is the Pure brand, in their little packets. A box of 70 can be very expensive, and it's because it's a rare herb. But it's worth it to me to just be safe. But that was a good point. Thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you, Cheryl. Okay, are there any other topics or discussion on reading levels? Or please be sure and sign in before you come to the microphone.
I'll do it after, rather it's longer.
Yeah, I'm Vicki, I'm a compulsive eater. And I've got a question about Ezekiel flower, because I've heard that Ezekiel flower is okay. And my sponsor lets me eat things with Ezekiel flour in it. It's a sprouted grain flour. I wanted to know whether there's any other, you know, opinions and stuff on that.
I don't know anything more than what... I don't have any extra information on that. I just know that it's always been approved. It's never bothered me as a grain. Physically, and it is sprouted, and I wish I had a label here so we could read.
For about a year when I decided to try the Ezekiel products, and that's the one that put me to sleep. And I just realized that was not going to work for me. I wasn't going to be able to function well if that was something I had in my food plan. So I'm grateful to say that I leave that out today. And of course, the people that I'm sponsoring, if that product works for them, I don't prevent them from using it because I can't. So, that wouldn't be fair for me to do. So if they can use it, they certainly do so. Let's see. We're at 4:00. Okay. So I guess we'll move on to the topic of weighing and measuring. And I'm going to, just read a couple parts out of Forever Abstinent on that topic of weighing and measuring. On page 5, Forever Abstinent says, "We weigh and measure our food. Use a postal scale, a kitchen scale, or a digital scale, and a measuring cup and measuring spoons. Many CEA HAL members continue weighing and measuring in restaurants. Although this is not a must, it is a successful method of preventing undereating, therefore dieting, as well as overeating." And I have a few copies of the weighing and measuring pamphlet, which this is priceless. And I got my hands on one of these in one of my first meetings, and just really grateful for it. There's a few parts in it that I'd like to highlight. Let's see. Okay, so Cheryl will be passing those out. Okay, and from the weighing and measuring from a food plan pamphlet says, a cup, a measuring spoon, and a scale. Those who suffer from weight and eating disorders are more than aware of food and its quote-unquote rightness or wrongness as a means to weight loss or weight control. If anything, people who suffer from a food addiction do battle so long that we become grandiose about our ability to make choices when it comes to food, meals, and eating in general. What we fail to realize is that after dieting, starving, fasting, and exercising for so many years, we know less about our real relationship to food than we did when we encountered our first diet. This grandiosity may be the setup for constant failure in the area of controlling our food addiction. Food takes a life of its own. Somehow addicts tend to destroy any semblance of boundaries about the one thing that is poised to do us in, food and eating. We steadfastly refuse to acknowledge that when it comes to food, we are down for the count. The food addict unwittingly insists that in the area of food and eating, we can make choices and choose well, even though time and experience have shown this is not so. In CEA How, we establish boundaries by insisting that mastery over the physical aspects of weight and eating disorders begins with the act of weighing and measuring every morsel of food eaten. This act clearly defines what is eaten, how much is eaten, and is the most meaningful beginning of honesty. The feeling among those who are recovering from food addiction, eating disorders, or weight disorders is that the reason food addicts are so resistant to weighing and measuring is that it removes the element of control, so-called control, from their purview. Addicts want control over their substance, and weighing and measuring tells the addict they are no longer in the driver's seat. And for me, that is so powerful because I'm surrendering that to my higher power. And I don't know how many times I would, you know, when I was in the food, I would rationalize, oh, this little bit won't matter, you know, oh, this won't hurt if I just have this one, you know, and it would just end up being 10 or the whole container. I mean, it just, I could never just do just one. So I really appreciate these words, and you know, it's just weighing and measuring has saved my life in so many ways. Having that boundary is priceless to me. I'll continue reading. Weighing and measuring also speaks to the willingness of the recovering food addict. Someone else has established the quantities that may be eaten, the time and frequency of the meals, and what is acceptable. Abstinence, as it manifests itself in the CEA How program, the addict has turned over control of everything concerning food. We accept that we must weigh and measure from a food plan. For some, it is the only means of recovery when to eat or not to eat becomes a critical decision. And yeah, again, this is emphasizing, you know, turning over the control of the food, giving it to higher power, committing our food to our sponsor, being honest with what we're doing with our food, with our meals. And let's see, we'll skip over a few sections. By weighing and measuring, we get a picture of just how much we actually ate and the difference in what we are eating. For years, we protest that we did not eat that much, but utilizing a weighed and measured food plan points out just how much we did eat. And I think for so long, you know, I there was other areas of my life where I felt I wasn't getting enough. I wasn't getting enough attention. I wasn't getting enough love. I wasn't getting enough time or sleep, or go on and on and on with the list, fill in the blank. And so I would, you know, I would just continue, you know, the compulsive eating because I wasn't getting enough of whatever else in my, you know, voids in my life. And someone said in one of the first meetings I attended in CEA How was, there is enough, I have enough, I am enough. And to me, that's just carried me through so many occasions where my mind goes back to that negativity of there's not enough of this or there's not enough of that. And, you know, you can just go on the list again. And no, there's going to be enough time. There's going to be enough money. There's going to be enough of whatever it is that I think I'm not getting enough of. And that has proven true so many times in my life. Further, a food plan is the beginning of acceptance. We must accept that someone other than ourselves is doing what is right for us. We need to believe that the plan of eating and disciplines connected with it are a means to a salutary end. Further, weighing and measuring offers us a baseline or database from which to judge how we are doing. Initially, weight loss is the only way can attest that we're quote-unquote doing it. Weighing and measuring is our foundation for recovery. If all else goes wrong in the abstainer's life, we weigh and measure with even greater verve and dedication. Thus, if we are experiencing chaos in other areas, we're experiencing calm with our food. We accept life as it is because all we can do to control any part of our life is to weigh and measure. Also, it is through the use of a food plan that we learn to let go of other things going on in our life. On a food plan, there are foods that we may feel have been, quote-unquote, left out and are healthy and necessary. We often share our knowledge with our sponsor, whose response is, quote-unquote, I only sponsor what is on the food plan. The newcomer then strains a bit, but eventually wants to what the sponsor has, so learns to let go. When a family crisis arises and we are told to let go, We have experience in this process in our first dealings with weighing and measuring and a food plan. Weighing and measuring from a food plan becomes a prototype of accepting things as they really are and letting go of wishful thinking and wishing, why me? You know, how many times have I said, why me? Why is this happening in my life right now? I don't have time for this. And I can say last month we had a drain backed up in our house. And so about one third of our house is torn apart right now. And so that was exactly what I said is, why me? Why now? You know, and started going into that, pity pot. And then I realized, you know what? I don't have to move out of my house. I can still use my bedroom. I still have this, you know, my house didn't burn down. I mean, I just went back to gratitude and just listed off all these things I was grateful for. So, you know, I had to turn the tables on that negativity that started up. And again, weighing and measuring. What are my positives? You know, there's this negative thing under my roof right now, but you know, there's a lot of positives. So, yeah, that was my recent crisis, which you know I'm grateful for walking through this and knowing that I'm going to get everything I need and in God's time, not mine. So this last paragraph in this pamphlet, it's on the very last part of it before you get to the 12 steps. This is the paragraph that to me is so priceless and has carried me through so many experiences and the reason why I want to share with all of you today. We define what we eat and how much we consume so that the task later on of defining who we are and how we fit into the scheme of things has meaning in history. All of this gives us insight into new levels of feeling and allows us to separate the imagined aches and pains of being an addict with the real aches and pains of living in the real world. Above all, we approach things quietly and thoughtfully and learn to weigh and measure decisions, relationships, and choices in our lives and in what we see in others' lives. Weighing and measuring gives us distinctive boundaries. And I love this so much. And when I was discussing with Cheryl about how passionately I felt about this pamphlet and you know, just I really, you know, that was one of my, you know, motivations in holding this workshop. And so I listed on your handout just some different ways that I've experienced weighing and measuring in my life. So I'd like to hear from all of you if you have some other examples or experiences where weighing and measuring has benefited you in your life. So I guess I'll read through these. To me, it is the spiritual aspect when we turn over the control and things turn out better than we expect. And also it applies to, you know, weighing and measuring the words we use, you know, how we're reacting to the things, to the people, places, and things in our lives, the different events. And I mean, I can use, you know, being, you know, driving. Driving is a really good example. I think I've been trying to practice in my life, you know, not fighting against the traffic, getting upset. You know, instead I'm, you know, looking around me, looking at, you know, the sights, the views, and trying to just stay in the present moment and enjoy that, you know, yeah, maybe the traffic is holding me up, but I don't have to react and get upset because then I'm just not going to feel good. So then again, that's a choice that I'm making. I'm making a choice not to get upset. And, you know, that's another choice of, you know, weighing and measuring my options at that moment. Time and how we use it, who we spend it with, you know, if we're using our time in a service position, working on our education, our creativity, volunteering, how we're using that. Activities and places that we visit, physical fitness, maybe you want to try some new thing, like, you know, I love belly dancing, and that's just been a joy in my life that I want to share with everyone. Money is another really good example of how, you know, weighing and measuring how we're using our money, and that's been another thing that, you know, I've been able to apply the See How program in, you know, in my financial decisions. As I, you know, before, a lot of my finances were going to, you know, something food related, and I wasn't in any good condition. But as I've worked the program, my financial situation has improved as well, having those boundaries. So I'd like to hear from from any of you that would like to come up and share, and please be sure and sign in if you have any questions or comments on weighing and measuring, and then we can.
Okay. Hi, I'm Wendy, a compulsive eater. I wanted to share you a recent experience I had with the idea of weighing and measuring time, and what this experience has taught me. I am two things as far as time is concerned: very busy, and I haven't ever been a really good time manager. I have trouble with transitions. I tend not to want to go to the next things because I'm so engrossed in what I'm doing. So I'm involved in an education program, and it's one taking a lot of my time, but I'm getting towards the end of it. And so about 10 days ago, I had a presentation to give, and you know, life intervenes and time flies, and the day before I had to give the presentation, I was out of energy, interest even. So what happened is that I told myself, okay, I'll wake up early and complete the task. And early meant 4 or 5 in the morning, because that's when I'm most awake. But I woke up at 3, and usually I can go right back to sleep when I wake up like that, but I couldn't this time. Plus, I had this voice inside my head saying, go work on it. So I did, and the amazing thing is that the time it took to complete the task is almost to the minute the time I had. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm thinking, whoa, this is cool, thank you. And then just last week, I had another assignment due on this, and again, these are not easy tasks for me, and I had the same thing, only this time I woke up at 2:30, and I again had the sense, listen here, and I did, and ran into some glitches, but every glitch I solved, and I got the task done almost to the minute with the time I had. So what I know is that this is a God thing. This is my higher power, my spirit team. I don't know who it is, but somebody's helping me out with this because I can't do it myself. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Wendy.
I'm sure a compulsive eater. The first, what? Oh, my. I know, isn't everybody Cheryl here? I've never run into so many Cheryls in my life. Yeah. The first time I spoke with my sponsor, I've been in the program for 5 years, but did it as a diet. So I always looked good, but was nuts inside. Didn't know that, though, till it all fell apart. And so my sponsor, I remember the first time talking to her, and she said, weighing and measuring has a spiritual side to it. And I thought, okay. I didn't know that, but and that it had to do it with self-care, and that just what I sure eating healthy self-care, but now I realize that there's other ways of self-care. I mean, before abstinence, my hit and miss abstinence, self-care was going to the movies, sleeping in, you know, all these other things that were more of a vice than they were anything else, and so. Self-care has grown from weighing and measuring, and I've shared this in a couple of things, to getting my mail every day, to the lady that just spoke. I didn't know you had calendars on your phone. I obsessed for a little while using a calendar on my phone, but now I do that, and it's just, she had said, you're going to start to crave order. Well, crave for me only had to do with food. So the idea of craving order, and it's slowly starting to happen, and I've shared in another one. My job is changing. I'm 61, and I'm going to be a regular classroom teacher. I'm sorry. The brain just doesn't juggle that much, and the pressure that teachers are under. I'm a teacher, but I haven't been in a regular room in a long time, and I've watched the stuff pile up. But it was the right thing to do. But it's come at the same time that recognizing the character defect of I've perfected procrastination, and so this has all come at the same time to help with that and learning to break things down into pieces, because I've always been all or nothing, okay? And so anyway, I had no idea that this transferred to other things. I just knew I wanted to be thin, bag everything else. Well, it's like, no, I like everything else even better. You know, it's marvelous, so thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Would anyone else like to discuss how weighing and measuring has benefited your life in other ways than just measuring and weighing your food?
I'll sign the paper when I finish. I'm Gloria Gray from Compulsive Ovita. I want to say weighing and measuring for me has truly helped me with adult children in my life, my adult daughters. Because I know how to stay on my side of the street. And I don't, you know, even when they call and they have things going on, they're not mine. It's kind of like, that's not my food. Same thing, that's not mine. I'm just here to be a sounding board. And in a gentle, loving way, say I love and they know that you'll make the right choice. And that's what weigh and measure give, because then what I'm doing is kind of like it's a spiritual protection. I'm turning them over to God. I'm turning my girls over to God and know that God can do more for them than I can. And when I go and weigh and measure my food, I'm turning that over to God. So that's what that gives me, that boundary with relationships. It helps me to know what's mine, what's not mine, how to stay on my side of the street. So that's what I receive from that.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Maria, compulsive eater.
Hi, Maria.
So glad to be here. Thank you so much for putting this workshop together. Weighing and measuring, how has it helped me in my life? And definitely, I mean, I came in here weighing probably 170 pounds. I have four children, one 13, 18, 19, and 22. The 22-year-old is in New York. He's in the American Institute of Culinary Arts because he wants to be a chef. I'm like, oh, you know, he knows I'm in this program. He knows I work my program. I weigh and measure my meals. And he's always asking, well, why are you doing that, you know? And when he realized that my ex-husband got colon cancer, that's when he said, wow, what you're doing, you keep doing what you're doing, he would tell me. My boss keeps telling me, keep doing what you're doing, you know. And weighing and measuring my meals is the number one tool for me to use, because without that tool, I'm not going to be clear-minded to be able to work the other six. My mind will be clogged up, and I'm going to be all over the place. I'm still all over the place now. My life is still unmanageable, and I still rush, and I still get anxious, I still get worried. But I still know when I don't know what to do with anything else in my life, I get up and I weigh and measure my meal because I know that's what I need to do. And then I do the rest of the other tools. And when, like, deep situations have happened in my life where my dad died, and, you know, I maintained abstinence through that and through taking him and through chemo and radiation and hospice and all this. But I maintained stability because of my program of recovery. It saved my life, you know. And I didn't eat no matter what. And I had to, and my sponsor would tell me, don't, just weigh and measure your meals. If you want, but they're going to have food there. Weigh and measure your meals. Take it with you. You don't know. And, you know, she's like really, she knows my life. She knows the trials I've gone through and how easy it is for me to deviate from my plan. If I'm sitting in a restaurant, I want that food no matter what. Nothing's going to stop me. I want to eat it because it's good. It has sugar. It has flour. It has stuff that I'm craving. So that's why I weigh and measure my meals and I bring them with me. That's just what I do. My sponsor tells me the same thing. Read the labels. It doesn't matter how long it's been on the shelf. Grab the, still read it. Every time I grab my food, I read it. I'm mostly vegan because I chose to do that for me. And you don't have to be. As long as you're weighing and measuring, that's what I chose to do because it's just, I felt healthier, more clear-minded, and just able to better take care of myself, you know. So I'm super grateful of how much this program has helped me. I had cholesterol problems. I was borderline diabetic, and my life was unmanageable. It was a mess. I thank God for the 12 steps, 12 traditions, the concepts. I mean, the tools are so simple. You know, there's no magic in it. I just get up, work the tools, make my phone calls, do my meetings. I do what I need to do for me, and I love it because it's helped me to also be of service to somebody else and share what was given to me to another person who's suffering through the compulsive eating, under eating, and vomiting. You know, I didn't vomit. I didn't put my fingers in my mouth, but I ate so much it just came up, you know. So I didn't want to live like that anymore. I was tired. I was done. But I'm grateful for this program, and a lot of people are grateful that I do it too, and a lot of people push food onto me. And you know what? If you're pushing food onto me, I just say no thank you, but down deep inside, I know it's either people that have no program at all, who are overweight and have no God, and are envious and jealous, or whatever the case may be, and I'm grateful that I still love them because they're either friends or family who are in the disease, and it's really, really, really sad for me to see that, and I pray for them. So for me, in this program, it's one day at a time. I'm only a bite away, so I have to remind myself of that. And I love God. I love this program, and thank you. I just wanted to share that from my heart. Thanks. That's it.
Thank you, Maria. I need to ask you to please sign the release form.
Should we go ahead and do the drawing?
Yeah. Okay. I think we'll do our drawing now. Is there someone else that wants to come up and speak on weighing and measuring?
I've got 1, 2, 6. Hi, I'm Adele, compulsive. I forgot what program. Compulsive eater and bulimic. I like the part where who you spend your time with. I went to Alabama, and I had this thing in my head since 2013 that I wanted to drive from Alabama to Maryland. It was going to be the other way around, and into Detroit to visit relatives. And my brother was going to go with me on this trip. And I told him the day before, you know, you can't drink driving these people's car, which is a rental car. And he said, okay. So the next day when I went to his house, he's pouring this clear stuff in another container, looked like an orange juice container. And so I didn't say anything. So it's like, okay, Adele, you wanted to make this trip. You know, this is your choice. You know, you can do all the driving. And so I chose that's how I would spend my time, you know, with him, is to drive, do all the driving. And I did cut the trip a day short. And so, and then, you know, I spent some time with my other cousin. They both, you know, was into their drinking and stuff. And I did have to apologize a couple of times, one to my brother and one to my cousin. But I made the amends. But, you know, I chose to, you know, it was something I wanted to do, and I looked at it like, you know, you do have a body in the car with you on this long drive from Alabama to Delaware, so just make the best of it. And I mean, it just was so beautiful, you know, just seeing the greenery, because I had never been to the Carolinas and stuff. So, and I had my abstinence food in the car, and what I didn't have, I would stop and get. And so, so I had a nice abstinence trip. Thank you.
Thank you, Adele. Is there anyone else that would like to comment or ask questions? Or
I
I'm Vicki, I'm a compulsive eater. And actually the weighing and measuring is kind of like spread out into all areas of my life. And I'm going to make you all laugh. I even weigh and measure my cat's food. and actually this has turned out to be an incredible benefit because I have two quite elderly cats. Now I've been weighing and measuring those foods since they were youngsters. And as a result, my 16-year-old and my 17-year-old cats do not have the health problems that elderly cats have. And they are still running around like the house like a couple of kittens. And this is, I'm just really, really grateful for this program. And actually, it was weighing and measuring the cat's food that kind of got me to surrender weighing and measuring my own. And I'll pass.
Thank you, Vicki.
I'm Linda, I'm a compulsive eater. Okay, I had to share because she shared about her cat. I had a rescue cat that got very obese because I had always been used to cats self-feeding and self-regulating their food. Well, she can't. She's a compulsive eater just like her mother. And so we're both on a weight and measure plan, and she can now tell time. Half an hour before it's time to eat, she starts meowing and circling my feet. But she's the perfect weight, and the vet says that'll be very healthy for her. So now I have this little two-legged dog that we rescued, who his back legs were chopped off and he was starving, and my son rescued him. And anyway, he has a wheelchair. And so he has to stay at exactly 18 pounds because it's too hard for him if he doesn't in his wheels. So he's on a weighed and measured food plan. So my household is now on a weighed and measured food plan. And I had a tenant move in because I rent rooms to help pay the mortgage. And she's now on a weight and measured food plan, and she's not even got an eating problem. But we just all do it, and it makes life easier. What I found learning to weigh and measure my food was that I can switch addictions because I came in as a compulsive eater, and within the first year I dropped 100 pounds. I was doing really well losing weight, so my clothes weren't fitting. So I started going to rummage sales and yard sales and picking out clothes from the size I was on down to fours. Well, I never got to a four. That was ridiculous. But I did get to a six at one point. So I found I had my closet so full, the closet rod fell. And I had a sponsor who was kind enough to come over and hold the black bag and say, put it in, put it in. So we learned to weigh and measure everything. Now I have what fits in my closet is the amount of clothes I can buy. So I didn't go to the 50-cent sale yesterday, you know, because I don't have any more room in the closet. But I'm learning with everything it's weighed and measured, how many books I have on the bookshelf, how many dishes I have in the cupboard, how much laundry I have to do. I mean, I'm just learning it spills over into everything, and it's helping me with my clutter, too, because I had a lot of closets that were full. I mean, I organized things. They were all in boxes, but they were just, everything was full. The garage, the closets, whatever. Well, that's slowly going away. Everything gets better when you start weighing and measuring and knowing that there's a limit to how much you should have. And at my age, it's time to start downsizing. I have a huge house. I need to start getting rid of more things. And now it just feels comfortable doing that because I've already released weight, and I know how to do this weighed and measured thing. So I think it affects all parts of our lives. It allows us to know that letting go isn't a bad thing. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. What do you think? Okay, is there anyone else that would like to share? Okay, I guess we'll go ahead and do our drawing now then. Oh, sorry, didn't see you there. No, go ahead, go okay. Ahead.
Hi, I'm Sarah, I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, I just wanted to say thank you for doing this workshop. I you know, just appreciate possibly getting some clarity, for sure. I say possibly, but for sure. And what I can say about weighing and measuring is it's a disciplined and structured approach. And for me, I don't have that in my life. If I'm out there on my own, I'm trying to control things, and that doesn't work out very well for myself. But having a disciplined and structured approach in weighing and measuring my life makes me feel like an adult, because I walk around not feeling like an adult, you know. But I'm so grateful for this program, and thank you everybody for sharing, and I really, I'm so grateful that I'm here. Thank you.
Oh, Sarah, I'll need to ask you to sign too. Well, I think if it's in your hands, you should keep it. Did you get one? Did you get one of those yet?
I have one at home. You could maybe share it with somebody who didn't get one. Maybe.
Yeah, they're selling at the literature table. Yes.
I got a couple more things to say. Adele Compulsivita Bulimia. You know, I had to weigh and measure. I had strained something, and the doctor told me I couldn't lift over 5 pounds. So I had to weigh and kind of measure things, because I just moved not too long ago. So I was putting my bag on the scale and putting plates and stuff in there and weighing it to take stuff downstairs. So, and then also had high blood pressure this year, and oh my God, when I looked at the sodium and stuff that I would eat, it was just really, especially my, vegetable in the can, and it scared me. You know, it was over half than what I could have, and so I started watching that, and it's like, you know, it was kind of hard to give up the, you know, yeah, but you know, I'm down. You know, I went to the doctor Tuesday. I can't remember. Well, my blood pressure is good, but I don't want to get back too much into the sodium. So I need to be on top of making sure that I do read the labels for sodium. Thank you.
Thank you, Adele. Yes. Especially being, you know, on vacation here in Las Vegas, I you know, it seems like my husband and I like to go to buffets, and I do take my scale with me. And I feel safe doing that, you know, and probably only one occasion have I had kind of a strange someone looking at me like, what is going on here, you know, but other than that, you know, I have to remember I'm taking care of myself, you know, and it might look strange to other people, but that's their business, you know, I'm taking care of myself, and just remembering that.
Cheryl, compulsive overeater. I had my sponsor tell me one time, don't be embarrassed to take your scales into the public, into a restaurant. Don't be embarrassed, be empowered. And I've always remembered that, and I thought I'd share it. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl.